Welcome to UBU Pod. Here you'll meet incredible people who tell us about their rich and interesting lives, of being visible, of working through challenges, and of coming out the other side. There's so much power in people's stories, and as a curious person, I love finding out how people tick. I'm your host, Megan Hamilton. I'm a speaking, visibility, and confidence coach, and I help you be you. Welcome to another edition of UBU Pod. I am so excited to be here with one of my absolute and longstanding best friends, Jennifer Fawcett. Jennifer grew up in rural Eastern Ontario and spent many years in Canada making theater before moving to the United States, which I am excited to talk about. She holds an MFA from the Iowa Playwrights Workshop. Her work has been produced in theaters across the country and published in Third Coast Magazine, Reunion, the Dallas Review, Storybrink, and in the anthology Long Story Short from Playwrights Canada Press. Her debut novel, Beneath the Stairs, comes out with Atria Books, Simon & Schuster, in February 2022. She teaches... Oh, 2022.
Yeah, it's 2-2-2-2-0-2-2.
No, it's on February 22nd? And it's a Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday.
Okay, wow. She teaches writing at Skidmore College and lives in upstate New York with her husband and son. Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. Good. This is fun.
This is fun. I don't know where to start. Okay, so I should start with this. I've known Jennifer Fawcett for 28 years.
Oh, you counted?
Like literally this month. Well, I mean, yeah, like
so rarely do math. So, okay.
28 years. We met in theater school and became fast friends and have been very tight friends ever since. We have done a lot together.
Career changes.
Living
together. We survived traveling together.
I would like to say for the record that I recognize that we survived these things mostly because you are a good person. Because in terms of who was the better friend or like dealt with things better, I think that was you. So
I started our road trip out by almost getting a shot.
I wasn't going to bring that up. Okay. Yeah, that's true. Let's picture it. Buffalo 2004. What was it? When did we go? I don't know.
Maybe five.
2005.
Right before I moved down.
Okay. So
two hot, intelligent, wonderful,
massive babes,
young women, massive babes, and a rental car, a red, was it a sports car?
Wasn't it like a Firebird or something?
It was sporty. Sun.
What was it? Sporty?
I don't know. I go by numbers of doors sporty. And color. That's how I distinguish cars. Red four wheels.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember at all.
We slowly approach the U.S. border. Jennifer's driving.
And the whole time, Jen was saying to me, we cannot say that I'm going down to look for an apartment. We can't say that because they won't let us in. I had been primed on this. We were just going for a camping trip. Fosse was driving. Just wanted to make sure
we were clear. I was mainly worried about the dried apricots. Would they count as produce? This was my main concern. So you kind of approach slowly. So we approached slowly, and I think I probably even stopped. And then when it was our turn
you didn't.
To go. I swear, I saw somebody waving their arm. I thought to me, now I guess they were waving to somebody else. It's one of those like classic things, except in this case, there were guns involved. So waving their arm for us to come forward, I thought to them, which they were kind of standing on the other side of the border. So I drove to them, which meant... that I drove past the booth where you're supposed to stop.
Where the big red stop sign is that says stop.
And the big angry man. He wasn't maybe angry in the beginning, but as soon as I rolled past him, I mean, I was probably going like 1 mile an hour. He got really angry.
Yes. Many people got really angry. People ran from all over.
And suddenly there were all these people and they had guns.
They had guns. Yep.
And I think I might have panicked and hit the gas. But just like a little lurch forward. And because I think at that point I was screaming and crying and then I hit the brakes. So that was my introduction to the United States, attempting to run the border.
Yeah. And then I just what did you start saying to the guards right off the bat? Do you remember?
What are you? Well, first they yelled, what are you doing? What do you think you're doing? And I think, I'm sure I probably started saying something about, we're going to Iowa, which is, you know, never sounds legitimate. Because they're like, why would you go to Iowa? I'm like, because I got into school and I'm going to find an apartment.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. And then the men started shouting at you that you do not have the right to live in the United States of America.
No, I do not.
And then we were detained. Yep. We had to go in this room and there was like a picture of George W. Bush on the wall. And that's when I got really scared. I was
he was the president.
Fuck.
So, I mean, it's not like,
I know,
but the post office too.
Yeah, no, he exactly. But yes, that I just got, I was like,
they yelled at us a bit more. They needed some proof. And the problem was I'd been offered acceptance to the University of Iowa, but he's probably not going to listen to this, so I can say this. The person who ran the program was a lovely, lovely man, but wasn't really so up on his administrative duties. And so he hadn't, like,
same for a lot of university professors.
I did not have anything formal from the University of Iowa, but I had had the foresight to print out the Hotmail email that I had received from him. From a dot matrix printer or something, saying, you know, we want to welcome you down to the University of Iowa. So that I don't know that really worked as proof. And anyway, we made it in, they let us in, they yelled at us, they shamed me. I cried a lot. Megan drove.
I drove after that. I did
for a while after that.
Yeah.
And we survived.
We survived. And I mean,
now I live in the States and I'm a dual citizen. So
yes. And a writer, which is what she went to school for. I'd like to say as well that I made it up to you in spades during that trip. I forced you to do things you didn't want to do. I was very irresponsible. I got very drunk one night and partied with rock stars. You didn't know where I was. No. That was shitty. And then I was so hungover. You had to drive the whole day the next day. So,
that's what friends are for. That's what old friends are for. Old friends go through the ups and the downs, and we have.
That is so true.
Here we are. Look what you're doing.
You're doing. Here we are. So at various points in our lives, we would get together and have like interesting conversations about where we were at. Because when we finished theater school, this is pretty common knowledge, but I failed my first year. So then I took a year off and then I went back. So we didn't actually graduate the first, together.
No,
you lost me, we got together almost every single day. So it was okay. But I remember it sticks out in my mind, you know, one time sitting outside, talking about our lives, talking about where we were and thinking, you know, in 10 years, this is the troubles we're having are not going to seem big. Like we will have gotten over all this. And, you know, we were both trying to be actors at the time. And it was like, you know, its own sense of stuff. I think you were always writing. And, And then 10 years later, we would get together and talk about the same thing. And I remember very specifically at one point, we both realized that the various points of sort of extreme pain in our lives, when we'd either experienced some pretty heavy depression or something had happened, had turned into art for both mm-hmm. of us, right? For me, it was songs. Mm-hmm. And for you, it was specifically, I think, Janie Jones at that point, mm-hmm. and which is a play that Jen wrote. And that stands out for me. Like, I can remember that quite clearly. I can remember how I felt. I remember the relief. And I remember also thinking, I have to remember this going forward, because I know from experience now that there are going to be other points in my life that are going to be really difficult. I am going to get depressed again. I am going to experience pain. And I must remember that it can transform into something amazing. I can use it later. And that was a really, yeah, that was a pivotal moment in my life, I think. Hmm. So tell me about, this. Okay. So Jen has a book coming out, which I talked about at the beginning, and it's called, Beneath the Stairs. Tell me about how that started, because that's a pretty interesting story.
With you.
Exactly. Just kidding. I didn't expect you to say that. Tell me again how I started this process.
No. I had graduated from grad school. I had done my 1 year, you're able to kind of spend a year after grad school on the particular student visa that I was on. So I'd spent my year and I'd been a playwright in residence. I was broker than broke. Mm-hmm. And I was waiting for my immigration stuff to go through because I was applying for a green card.
Because it is a privilege to live in the United States of America. Mm-hmm. Not a right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was waiting for the paperwork. I had no money, none, like no money. We were living, Sean and I, my husband and we had just gotten married. We were living in like a tiny, awful, little, terrible house. And we were back in Iowa City. And, you know, there was a lot of talk about starting a theater company and doing all this stuff, but we weren't actually doing, he was away all the time. And I was just like very alone and I couldn't do anything. Legally, I wasn't allowed to work because I didn't have a green card. So I was in limbo where I felt like I should be making use of all this time, but I didn't know what to do. And I was just constantly like anxious. And I had no money. A friend would, you know, ask me to babysit his daughter and like he'd give me a check for like $30. And I can remember like jumping on my bike and like rushing to the bank and depositing it so I could put it towards my phone bill. And that sounds like the sort of thing that like you do if you're 18, but I was like in my 30s. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it was not so good. And so ashamed. I just felt like such a failure. Like here I am, I've just graduated from a master's program. I'm kind of in this limbo. We must have been talking at some point and you mentioned NaNoWriMo, which lots of people know about, but if I didn't.
I did?
Yeah. Yes. That's why I'm giving you this credit. NaNoWriMo is National Novel Writing Month, and it's in November. And the idea is that for the month of November, you aim to write 50,000 words by the end of the month. And people do it like it happens. It's international, and there are groups like literally all over the place. And sometimes people like get together in cafes and they just write together, and you can like post. I mean, this is also like before social media was what it is now. You can kind of post it, and it's just sort of this way of kind of jumping in and doing something. Mm-hmm. And there are novels that have come out of it. But you were the one, I don't know, Meg. I don't remember, I don't even remember the conversation. I just remember you said, well, why don't you do NaNoWriMo? And I guess I decided to do it. I mean, I had like literally no excuse. I had no money, but I had a computer and a brain and some hands and I could type. And so I started writing a story, and I immediately, when I started writing, pictured this house, this supposedly haunted house that I had gone to when I was about 13 years old with some of my friends on our bikes. We'd biked there one summer, kind of spent the whole summer like just biking. I lived in the country. Like we just biked and biked and biked all day. You'd go to somebody's house, you'd raid their fridge, and then you'd keep biking. And that was like what we did. And I have a memory of going to this house. And it was, the weird thing about it was that it was in the shape of an octagon and it was supposed to be haunted. And so that kind of just came into my mind. I just pictured these four in my head. It was four girls, all about 13 years old, 12 to 14, sort of in that range, about to go into high school. So kind of on the cusp of that change, looking at this haunted house and wondering what had happened there that made it haunted, and daring each other to go in. And so that kind of started it. But at the same time, a few years earlier, I had got back in touch with a friend of mine. She'd been a friend when I was like way before I met you, like when I was a kid. We'd been kid friends. And we'd lost touch when we actually were about that age, because I went to a different school and she moved away. And she'd ended up struggling with horrible, with a lot of mental illness. She had borderline personality disorder. She was eventually diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. And she had got back in touch with me, and we'd reconnected over this play that I'd written about depression.
Is that Janie Jones?
Janie Jones. Yeah. So we'd reconnected, and I mean, she lived in Alberta. I was in she was in Edmonton and I was in Toronto. So, I mean, we were really far apart, but we'd reconnected. And then I got this phone call just out of the blue from her dad saying she's committed suicide.
And what? I didn't know that.
Well, it happened. This was like, I've gone like back to like 2003, I think, with this. So she was kind of in my mind. I don't know. So I kind of was thinking of those two things. I don't know. Somehow those things came together. And so Beneath the Stairs is very much a story about this haunted house. I think of it as a story about what it is to be haunted. It has sort of some of the typical things that you'd expect with a haunted house, and it's creepy and all that sort of thing. But what I'm really interested in is this idea of what it is to be haunted, with the past, with guilt, with stuff like that. And so, anyway, I did NaNoWriMo. That's sort of where it started, but then it went stagnant and it kind of stayed. I just, every once in a while, would keep going back to it over years. And then, you know, started teaching, got my green card, was able to start teaching then. We had our theater company, wrote lots of plays, sort of did other things, but I kept in down moments, I kept going back to the novel, which at that point was just a gigantic Microsoft Word document.
Let's
eventually finished it.
Okay. This seems like a good time to take a break. And when we return, we're going to talk about the epic journey of Beneath the Stairs, formerly known as the Octagon House.
The Octagon House, yes. The very original title, The Octagon House.
And we'll be back in a sec.
Hey, are you a business owner? How many times have you been asked, tell me about your business? And you stumble through some kind of awkward answer. It's just this little thing that I do. Sound familiar? You want to be able to enthusiastically and confidently talk about your business. You want to be able to say yes to conferences. You want to be able to show up in videos, but you keep putting it off for another day, which becomes a month, which becomes a year. It's still on your to-do list, but it's now on page 7 underneath redo bookkeeping procedures. Well, now you can bring this back to page 1 because I've developed an exciting business growing program just for you. Welcome to Thriving Visibility, a 3-month program for ethical business owners who want to be a passionate, authentic figurehead for their business, who want enthusiasm and excitement without the bullshit, who want to be able to express themselves on the outside how they feel on the inside. If this sounds like you, make sure you're on my email list as registration opens the second week of November for a January 2022 start.
But wasn't that what November was about? Oh. You must be brave now. Piano practice nights.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Guess I won't bring that up. Okay.
I love that song. I love that song so much.
I love it too. But okay. Well, we're officially let's be back. We're back. Okay. So Jennifer and Jen and I were just talking about a bunch of stuff, but she had talked about the woman committing suicide and I had reminded her. So we wrote a song together. While she was away in school, she had written a poem and I said, oh, can I put music to it? And the song happens to be November, and which is also the month of Jen's birthday and the month of NaNoWriMo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lots of things happening. My mom's birthday.
Just generally Scorpios.
Scorpios. Ooh. Stingy.
Sagittarius. Yes.
I don't know.
Dear.
Happened at the end of November? Redact. Okay. All right. We'll see. That one I might keep. Just kidding. Okay. So you have this novel that you've written. It gets put away because a lot of other things start happening. You know, we talked earlier about how we were just sort of waiting for stuff to happen in our lives. And you know, you talked about being broke. Yeah, then we started making it happen. And it wasn't the first time.
The transition.
Right? Hmm. I think both of us had learned in our 20s how to make things happen and that we had the capability of doing it.
Yeah.
And then when we seemed to be sort of in similar situations in our early 30s or whatever, where we felt we're feeling really stuck.
Yeah.
And even that road trip, and also for me, a trip to Europe, just helped me really understand how independent I could be and that I had the power to do my own shit.
Yeah.
And that was like
discovering that was like the biggest, game changer that I can point to in my whole life. Like there's been a lot of things that have changed things, but discovering that I could do something myself, I think was probably the biggest change. Doesn't mean that I don't like doubt it all the time. I do.
Yeah.
I have to revisit it.
But I never do.
That's impressive. Yeah,
sorry, can't relate. And I think there's something interesting about training to be an actor and spending so many years relying on other people's opinions of you.
Yeah.
And the freedom of not having to do that anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, right? Like, not relying. I mean, we're still, you know, like, you're still submitting. Let's talk about how long it took you to find a publisher. Ugh. Right?
A really long time. A lot of rejections.
Did you save them all?
I'm sure I have them in my email because my agent would send them to me.
Yeah.
Because they were usually pretty nice, but it just felt like, and I have to apologize. The garbage truck is coming by, so it's going to get loud here.
That's okay.
They're driving right by. Guess they're not getting the recycling. Okay. She would send the rejections to me, and they were often very like, I really like this and I really like that and I really like this, but there was always that but, and it was so heartbreaking. And there were two different times when I got really, really close, when somebody actually, like an editor, wanted to get on the phone with me and give me notes and offer, like, and then I did a revision and sent it back, you know, like it was, those were like such close calls. And it just felt like, this is just going to always be close calls, and I'm never going to get the yes. And then I finally got the yes, but it just,
you got the yes,
but it just, it's one of those things that like you work on for years and years, and you start to feel like you're just the crazy person. Like, because like, oh, you're still working on that novel of yours? Because it's like you don't have anything to show for it. So it just seems like you've got this weird dream that clearly everybody else understands is ridiculous and you should just stop pursuing, but you're like tenacious about. And then when you get it, everyone's like, oh my God, that's so great. Oh, congratulations. But you're like,
and like yes.
And it gets, you know, like, and I appreciate that it gets celebrated and it's seen as this big accomplishment, but the big accomplishment didn't happen on the day that I got the yes. The big accomplishment happened on the hundreds of days leading up to that, where you just keep going.
Where you kept saying yes to yourself. You
keep saying yes to yourself. Exactly. Like that's where the big, really big accomplishment happens.
Yeah.
So the yes from somebody else is very helpful.
Yeah. I mean, I relate to that with music. You know, sometimes I think, because I'm about to get, I'm in the early stages of thinking about recording again. And, you know, part of me's just like, yeah, thank you. Part of me's just like, fuck, am I really going to do this again? Am I really going to do this again? It never turns out the way I hope it is. Not the actual thing, but like, you know, the putting it out there. But ultimately, it's just really not about anybody else. It just isn't. It is about having an idea, making it happen, doing the stuff, being joyful in the times, you know, for the parts that you really like about it. Like for me, that's in the recording studio. I love it. I love it. And making it happen and just being, saying yes to yourself. And really, you know, you can't teach that to somebody like that. You could tell somebody and they don't get it until they do it themselves. Right.
Yeah. I don't think you can get it until you do it yourself. Until you kind of make that step, which again, I don't want to come across sounding like, well, I've got it all figured out, because I feel like I have to re-examine that step every time I take it. Like I keep having, you know, now I'm trying to start book number two and it's in some ways more frightening now, because I'm like, oh, what if I only had one in me? What if I can't do it again? What, you know, what if? And trying to keep my mind on, I'm trying to keep my focus on the bigger picture, on like, and on the joy of the process and the joy of not the product, but the process of like, I like telling stories this way. So I'm going to, do it again, even if it fails.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the secret to life.
There we go. We solved it.
Yeah. Okay. Done. You're welcome, everybody. And good night. I really do think it is though. Can we just take a step back? I read an earlier version of Beneath the Stairs. And back then it was called The Octagon House. And a couple of things. So I couldn't finish it because it was very scary. And at the time, I was getting nightmares. So I wrote to you because you and I would have this thing where if you gave me something to write, I knew how important it was to you to keep in touch about it and not, you know, like even if I hadn't been able to read it, just to let you know, because otherwise, you know, we're just sitting there sort of going, I don't know, do you like it?
I know, which I really appreciate. Not many people do.
Well, you and I had talked about that. And I'm the same with when I give people things. It's like, if you don't Like, if I give it to you and you don't say anything, I'm just going to think you hate it. And then that sucks. But I did, I mean, I remember writing to you to just be like, I'm at the point now, and this is the part that you, that is no longer in the book because it's very scary. It's just like, I'm so sorry. I cannot finish this book. But it was hard because what I loved, and I am certain that this still remains, the incredible sense of familiarity with being 13, having a gang of girls, riding on your bikes, the dynamics between girl friendships at that time, all of the different things that are happening to you, the excitement of some people are starting to get into boys, other people aren't really into boys, haunted houses, doing things independently, like that you maybe never tell your parents about. Like that's the first time that started. And I got so into... My parents didn't
find out about this house until just like a month ago when I mentioned it. They're like, what?
Yeah. You did what? Yep.
We've had lots of conversations. You've done that. I'm like, of course you didn't know.
Yeah. You're not supposed to. Would you like to know all the other things you don't know? I don't think you do. and how, you just so beautifully encapsulated that particular point of time in your life. And you're welcome. It's such a, it's like, it's all of the things. It's a magical time. It is a terrifying time. It is a awkward time. It is an embarrassing time. And you have so many memories that you carry from that time with you for the rest of your life. Right.
Yeah.
And I feel that a lot of women are really going to relate to that. When they read your book, and hopefully will not be as scared as I am. It's not scary anymore. Right. You said,
no, I don't think, I mean, the house is creepy, right? I'm like the biggest scaredy cat ever. I don't watch horror movies.
That's why I couldn't believe it when I was reading this book going, oh my God, I can't sleep.
I think because my imagination is just like too, like I'd catch on to that and just go, ugh. But it's more, the house is super creepy, which for me was really fun to create. Yes, she... the protagonist, who is an adult, right? So she's going to have to go back in the basement. Like, you just know she's going to have to go back and sort of face what's down there, which is what really sort of triggered the whole thing back when they were 13. So that's sort of like a little summary. So like when they're 13, 14, they visit this house and the one of the girls goes into the basement and sort of sees something there that never leaves her. And then fast forward 20 years and they're in their 30s and out of touch, and she gets back in touch and she ends up going back to that basement and something happens to her there, and so her friend is trying to kind of figure out what is in there, this like what is the source of this haunting. I think,
did you do that?
No, are you kidding?
Okay.
Chicken. No. This is what I mean. I can make my characters do things that I would never do. The joy of creating, like, no, seriously, character, you go in there. I'll just stay here.
You tell me all about it.
Tell me all about
it. I'm just going to stand here with my pen.
Exactly. So no, I don't think it's like scary. Like, Are there suspenseful moments? Yes, I definitely think there are. I certainly hope, if I've done my job, that there are suspenseful moments. Yes, she goes at the end, she's going back into the basement and she's going to see something there. And but I want it to be about so much more than that.
And it is. And, you know, I'm just harping on the scary stuff for humor, well, for this, jokes
and
here.
This but this has been, a, this has actually been one of the reasons why it's been hard to, it was hard to get someone to give me a yes, is that it sort of sits on this fence between literary and genre. Mm. So genre is like all suspense horror sort of stuff. and literary is more literary, and mine's kind of walks a line between them. And so some people were just like, I don't know how to place this. And in publishing, that's a really big thing. How do you place something?
Music too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all, you know, I got to sell this. I need to know who I'm targeting. And
you're like, but my art, my art doesn't care about genres.
Yeah. Well, like, well, my bottom line doesn't care about your art.
Yeah.
But I found the editor who I've been working with, who's absolutely incredible. That's sort of what she was looking for. And so it's been a really good fit. It's the sort of thing I like to read. I mean, I love suspense.
Yeah.
But I also want there to be some kind of meat to it. Like I want the text, the prose to be, we call it kind of chewy, like in a good way, not just like fluff.
Yeah. You know, like for not just as an afterthought for the creepy part.
Yeah, exactly. Like that the characters are compelling in and of themselves, and they're complex, and the settings are real and alive and vivid and all that sort of thing. So,
yeah. And I would say that they are. And I am really looking forward to reading this version of the book. And I'm excited to get my copy. I pre-ordered it like maybe a month ago. Aww. I think. I can't remember. It was a very exciting day. I screenshot my pre-order and sent it to my mom, and we had a big exciting time. Can you, how can people pre-order your book?
You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on, if you go through Simon & Schuster. So it's being published by Atria Books, which is a division of Simon & Schuster. So if you go to Simon & Schuster, .ca, you should find it.
Okay.
I should probably know that better. It's on down
That's
here
good.
It's on IndieBound.
Okay.
So, and I know somebody in Toronto who got it, I think, through Indigo.
Oh, really? I got mine through Amazon.
Through Amazon, yeah. It's on Amazon.ca.
Well, it's very exciting, Fosse, and we are looking at February 22nd, so 2/22/2022 on a Tuesday. Thank you so much for joining me. And I love, you know, I think that talking about the process and how to bounce back from rejection, that's my favorite thing. And thank you so much for sharing your stories about that.
Thanks for letting me.
And the rifles pointed at us. That moment in time.
I think they would have just shot our tires. I don't think they would have shot us.
I don't know. They seemed excited to have something to get mad about. Anyway, thanks so much. And everybody go and check out Jen's book, Beneath the Stairs. Bye.
Bye.
Right off the bat, I'd like to apologize for the sound quality of my microphone. Something weird switched when we were recording, and you know, I just felt like the conversation itself was good enough that hopefully you'd be able to deal with the crunchiness, but sorry. And I think the biggest takeaway from this conversation is, and it always is, and this is why this is my best friend, is because we are resilient and we still keep trying. And even though other people might be like, what are you doing? We know and believe that we are doing what we should be doing. I hope that you will go and pre-order Jennifer Fawcett's book, Beneath the Stairs. If you want to listen to our song, it's called November. You can find it anywhere where you stream music. And thank you for being here. All of the music is my own. I'm Megan Hamilton. I produce everything and put it together. And I am very grateful for your listenership. Thank you.